Welcome, and thank you for standing by. All participants are in listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference call. At that time, you may press star one to ask a question over the phone. Today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And now I will turn the meeting over to Ms. Kathy Harbin. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Jenny, and thank you all for joining us today for the release of a new CDC vital signs, this one on the use of pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP, capital P-R, capital E-P, for HIV prevention. We're joined today by CDC's Principal Deputy Director, Dr. Anne Schuchat. That's A-N-N-E, Schuchat, S-C-H-U-C-H-A-T, as well as Dr. Jonathan Merman, Jonathan, J-O-N-A-T-H-A-N, Merman, M-E-R-M-I-N, and he is Director of CDC's National Center for HIV, Hepatitis, STDs, and TB Prevention. And we're also joined by Dr. Eugene McCrae, Eugene, E-U-G-E-N-E, McCrae, M-C, capital C-R-A-Y. He is Director of CDC's Division of HIV Prevention. I'll now turn the call over to Dr. Schuchat.
Thanks so much, Kathy, and thanks everyone for joining us today to discuss CDC's new Vital Signs report. Each month, we focus on the latest data about a critical health issue facing our nation and what can be done to better protect the public's health. This month, in advance of World AIDS Day on December 1st, our Vital Signs report is on HIV prevention. HIV continues to threaten the health of too many Americans. More than a million people live with the disease in the United States, and about 40,000 new infections are diagnosed each year. CDC has recommended pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP, as one of several effective actions for reducing the risk of HIV infection. PrEP is a daily pill for people at substantial risk of acquiring HIV that prevents the virus from establishing a permanent infection when an individual is exposed to the virus sexually or through injection drug use. When taken daily, PrEP can reduce the risk of sexually acquired HIV infection by more than 90% and by more than 70% among people who inject drugs. While using PrEP inconsistently results in much lower levels of protection, a growing body of research indicates that PrEP is highly effective in preventing HIV infection when taken consistently. In today's Vital Signs, we explore new data that suggests many Americans who are at substantial risk for HIV infection may benefit from PrEP. According to our research, they are 1 in 4 sexually active gay and bisexual adult men, 1 in 5 adults who inject drugs, and 1 in 200 heterosexually active adults. Today's Vital Signs draws on data from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, or NHANES, the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, and the National Survey of Family Growth. We'll expand upon the findings in just a few minutes, but first I want to stress that we need to do more work to make sure clinicians are aware of PrEP. Although PrEP for HIV prevention was approved by the Food and Drug Administration in 2012, and CDC has published clinical guidelines on PrEP, one recent study found 1/3, or 34%, of primary health care providers still had never heard of PrEP. So we need to increase awareness among clinicians. We also need to provide them with the tools to help identify patients at substantial risk for HIV infection, determine which prevention options are best for those patients, and counsel those patients about all of their prevention options. Here's the bottom line. Doctors need more PrEP about PrEP. We recognize that clinicians are working in a highly complex prevention landscape. That's why, along with PrEP, all available prevention actions should be considered, including HIV testing, so people actually know if they're infected, treatment to suppress the virus among people living with HIV. Correct and consistent use of condoms, reducing risk behaviors, and drug treatment and use of sterile injection equipment for people who inject drugs. For a closer look at the findings and more specifics about who can benefit most from PrEP, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Jonathan Merman, Director of CDC's National Center for HIV/AIDS, Viral Hepatitis, STD, and TB Prevention.
Well, thank you, Dr. Shukat. Before we discuss these findings, it will be helpful to provide some clarity around the individuals for whom PrEP is indicated. So our guidelines recommend that PrEP be considered for those people who do not have HIV but are at substantial risk for infection, including any sexually active adult in an ongoing sexual relationship with an HIV-infected partner, gay and bisexual men who aren't in a monogamous relationship with a recently tested HIV-negative partner, and don't always use condoms or have recently been diagnosed with a sexually transmitted infection. People who inject drugs that aren't prescribed by a clinician and don't always use sterile injection equipment, and those who are at risk for acquiring HIV sexually. And heterosexual men and women who don't always use condoms with sexual partners who are at substantial risk for HIV infection, including bisexual men and people who inject drugs. As part of our high-impact approach to prevention, we wanted to gain a clear perspective of where PrEP could potentially achieve the greatest results in combating HIV. PrEP is a powerful prevention tool, but it is still not reaching all those who need it. To help guide education efforts, we wanted to determine how many Americans need to be counseled that PrEP could be an option for them. We therefore analyzed national data to estimate the total numbers, percentages, and proportions of people with indications for PrEP in three transmission risk populations: men who have sex with men, people who inject drugs, and heterosexually active adults. So these are subgroups that do not consistently adhere to the variety of prevention methods that Dr. Shukat outlined. Our analyses find 25%, or about 492,000 gay and bisexual men, have indications for PrEP. 19%, or about 115,000 people who inject drugs, have indications for PrEP. And less than 1% of heterosexually active adults have indications for PrEP, or about 620,000 people. Regardless of whether it's men who have sex with men, people who inject drugs, or heterosexually active adults, it's important that clinicians discuss behavioral risks with all patients to identify those individuals who are at substantial risk and could benefit from more information about PrEP as a potential prevention option for them. As Dr. Shukat also mentioned, clinicians are operating within a highly complex HIV prevention landscape. And though PrEP is promising and can help fill gaps, no single tool will be sufficient to end the HIV epidemic in the United States. To maximize the success of our national HIV prevention efforts, we must use all the tools we have to achieve meaningful results. For example, keeping HIV under control through treatment helps people with HIV live longer, healthier lives, and can dramatically reduce the risk of transmitting the virus to others. But currently, just about 30% of Americans with HIV have their virus suppressed. As today's report indicates, other effective HIV prevention tools are not consistently used by all who need them. Many of those at sexual and drug-related risk are not consistently protected by condoms or sterile equipment. This is where PrEP can fill an important gap. But to fill that gap, we must achieve greater awareness among clinicians and help them connect PrEP with the people who could most benefit from it. So now I want to turn things over to Dr. Eugene McCrae, Director of CDC's Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention, who can tell us a bit about what CDC is doing to ensure more Americans can take advantage of PrEP.
Thank you, Dr. Merman. PrEP is one piece of CDC's overall high-impact HIV prevention strategy that you mentioned, a strategy that matches the right tools to the right people. CDC continues to work to scale up other highly effective prevention strategies, such as ensuring people living with HIV are receiving care and treatment to prevent transmission to others and to help them live longer, healthier lives, encouraging consistent and correct condom use, and educating those at high risk of transmitting or acquiring HIV about all available prevention strategies, including PrEP. PrEP will be one of the right tools for some people at high risk of HIV infection. And our experience shows that when we focus our effort, we can succeed in increasing use of PrEP. For example, in a separate analysis also reported in Vital Signs Today, researchers from New York State Department of Health found that PrEP use among New Yorkers covered by Medicaid increased substantially just a year after statewide efforts was launched to increase PrEP knowledge among potential prescribers and candidates. San Francisco started focusing on making PrEP available to people at risk, including providing it at no charge to the uninsured in 2013. Today, by some estimates, 15% of gay men in San Francisco are taking PrEP. And while we can't credit this to PrEP alone, last year, San Francisco reported a record low of only 302 new HIV diagnoses, compared to more than 2,000 annually that were reported at the epidemic's peak. This type of effort needs to be replicated nationally, strategically scaling efforts and targeting the right people who stand to benefit from it the most. So CDC is working on many fronts to ensure that people know about PrEP and can access the drug if they choose to. For example, earlier this year we announced a $216 million investment nationally in part to help community-based organizations ensure high-risk negative, HIV-negative individuals have access to prevention and support services such as PrEP. We also announced an additional $125 million investment to help health departments expand our use of PrEP and other high-impact prevention strategies. We're supporting research to better understand the practical requirements, costs, and impact of providing PrEP at federally qualified health centers. And CDC has published a range of resources to educate and provide providers resources to educate and advise providers about PrEP. In addition to our 2014 clinical guidelines, we've also developed step-by-step PrEP checklists and interview guides, and we support a hotline to answer questions from providers about when and how to offer PrEP. PrEP isn't right for everyone, no single method is, but it's right for some people. And when the men and women at high risk for HIV adhere well to PrEP or whatever prevention methods work best for them, we can make gains in national efforts to slow the HIV epidemic. Now I'll turn it back to Dr. Shukat for some closing remarks and to sum up today's findings.
Thank you, Dr. McCray. In summary, I want to reiterate, PrEP works, but doctors need more PrEP about PrEP. And PrEP can only make a difference if all healthcare providers, not just infectious disease specialists, are aware of it and know who can most benefit from it. And if the people at greatest risk for HIV infection know PrEP may be a viable prevention option. To truly affect change in the nation's HIV epidemic, we need continued and collaborative action from clinicians, medical and professional associations, advocates, and groups that implement HIV prevention efforts. And we also need the media. And now I'll turn things back to Kathy to moderate the question session.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Shukat. Jenny, we are ready for questions now.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question over the phone, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name and company clearly when prompted. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. And our first question over the phone comes from Maggie Fox, NBC News. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks very much. I'm wondering if we can elaborate a bit more on what does work. New York reported on some of their success rates. Dr. Merman mentioned what's happening in San Francisco. Can we have a bit more detail on how, especially in this age where everybody doesn't watch the news every night, you get the word out to the doctors and to the people at high risk of HIV who need to know about this? Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Maggie. The question is about what were the secrets of success in New York or in San Francisco. And I think a key factor in both communities is that they brought the relevant groups together. The New York State report describes a statewide stakeholder effort where they had insurers and they had clinician groups and they had the Medicaid groups and so forth coming together to figure out how are we going to make this work in our community. I think in San Francisco, similarly, the health department, the clinician organizations, the stakeholder groups. Often when a new drug is licensed or approved by the FDA, docs just take it up. But this is a little bit different and a little bit more complicated. So we think that there was a collaborative effort to pull the stakeholders together to plan how to make this happen. You needed to raise awareness among clinicians. You needed to make sure that the insurers were ready to go and that copayments or medical assistance might be offered. You needed to make sure that the frequent questions were answered about how to monitor patients and that consumers had the kind of information they needed. So I think that in those two episodes, they really brought groups that were knowledgeable together to try to make a plan of action locally. So I think, did you have a follow-up question?
Well, yeah, I would just like to be able to paint a picture of what that looks like. I mean, it's all kind of theoretical, isn't it? What did they actually do? What did work and what didn't? And also, I wasn't real clear on the statistics out of San Francisco. I was hoping we could get a repeat of that. Thanks.
Okay, sure. And Dr. McCray is going to go into a little bit more detail.
Sure. I was just to add, specifically, providers play really a central role in increasing awareness and uptake, and that was very much a part of the process in New York City. The advocates also play an important role, and specifically they can raise PrEP awareness and understanding in the at-risk population so that consumers of PrEP know that it's available to them. And then, of course, the medical and professional associations play an important role in educating providers and sharing lessons learned, and that was clearly a big part of the New York City and San Francisco effort. And fourthly, there are important groups that are relevant in terms of implementing PrEP in the communities. That state and local health departments, there are community-based organizations. It's really important that they be a part of the process, and they can really integrate PrEP education into existing programs. And to those that are working in clinical settings, they can provide PrEP to patients with indications for use. And then finally, the individuals that are substantial risks for HIV need to be educated and involved in the process, and they can really, in many instances, put pressure on their providers and can ask their providers specifically about providing PrEP to them. And all of those things happen in New York City or happening in New York City and San Francisco, which I think has been responsible for the uptake that we've seen there.
Next question, operator.
And next we have Mike Stobie, the Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi, all. Thank you for taking my call. Just a couple of questions. So these are estimates of how many people could be or should be counseled about PrEP. I just want to make sure I don't make a bad assumption. What do we mean by counseling? Does it mean that a doctor or healthcare provider recommend to them that they get PrEP, or that does it mean merely inform them about the existence of PrEP as an option? And then I was wondering, do you all have statistics about what proportion of people who are counseled about PrEP choose to go on to it? And I had a third question, which is, of the roughly 1.2 million who I guess are eligible for counseling, do you know how many have been counseled about it?
Thanks so much, Mike. We don't have the statistics on how many people have been counseled or on what proportion of those who are counseled decide to opt for PrEP. But what we mean by that discussion is going through risk behaviors with a person and going through lifestyle and adherence issues with a person, sorting out whether a person will be able to regularly take medication, come back for follow-up appointments. We recommend every 3 months the person continue to see a provider for lab tests and checks to make sure that they're not having side effects from the drugs and that they're taking them the right way. And the conversation also involves really reviewing the behaviors and continuing to promote risk reduction. Even if you go on PrEP, we want to make sure that people are protecting themselves from other sexually transmitted infections, which won't be blocked by the PrEP medicine. Did you have a follow-up?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Duncan Osborne, Gay City News. Your line is open.
So I was at a town hall meeting this past Thursday with a group of advocates and some PrEP users, and they're saying that what they're finding is that doctors don't know about PrEP, and that in some instances when doctors either do know about PrEP or they're told about PrEP by a patient who wants it, that the doctors are resistant to prescribing PrEP. I thought I heard a statistic about how many doctors know about PrEP from you. Do you have that information? How many doctors are trained about PrEP and can prescribe it? And do you have any data about doctors being resistant to prescribing PrEP?
Thanks so much for those questions. The survey of docs from 2015 estimated that 34% were not aware of PrEP. Now, the idea that two-thirds are aware of it doesn't mean two-thirds are comfortable with prescribing it, and so we do think that this is a fairly new intervention for many clinicians. So we don't have statistics about resistance or reluctance, but one of the key things about today's vital signs is that the program is issuing tools to make it much easier for clinicians to learn how to prescribe PrEP, to learn how to counsel, to learn how to have these discussions. And this issue is shown in our vital signs with a five-step process that is really not that complicated. So I think your information from the town hall is probably quite accurate, that many people don't know about this and aren't using this in a routine way, but that's what today's release is about, really helping the word get out that we think PrEP is highly effective. It's a good tool for the right people, and it's not that complicated to deliver. And so we think any prescribing healthcare provider can deliver PrEP care.
Actually, a quick follow-up here?
Sure.
How many doctors were surveyed in this 2015 survey, and did you see any differences by region or by city?
I don't have the information on the survey details. It was a national doc-style survey in 2015,
right,
carried out by the Porter Novelli services, but I don't have the numbers, and those types of services don't usually get used city-specific data. They're really a snapshot that we can use over time. Thanks for that question.
Thank you.
Next question, operator.
And next we have Adam Snell, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Your line is open.
Thanks, doctors, for taking some time to talk today. Wanted to get a little bit into the cost question. I'm curious if any of you can speak to how much this treatment costs and if generally it's covered by common insurance plans.
Yeah, thanks. The cost may be misleading. We think that it's estimated to be about $10,000 a year, but there are many negotiating tools and also medical assistance that's available for people who are low income. We know that Medicaid, the public insurance, covers PrEP, and that most private insurance will cover PrEP, but they may need some pre-approvals to be made. One of the tools that we're providing is information about how to help make sure your patients are, you know, applying for insurance and have access to the medicines. And we know that the company has drug assistance programs to help patients without insurance pay for PrEP. But to help get assistance with the copays and such, there are tools. That's one of the things that the New York State Health Department worked out in really planning their rollout, both working out, you know, directories of PrEP providers to make that accessible to consumers, and then also convening the insurer groups to make sure that they could make this simple. This is a recommended intervention that we think is quite effective, and it's a lot more cost-effective to prevent HIV than to have a lifetime of health care costs.
Thank you.
And this is Jonathan Merman. I just wanted to add to Dr. Shukat's comments that there's some examples of PrEP programs that have had high access to the for the people who need the medication. So, for example, in Seattle, where it's one of the priority HIV prevention tools, a program that is providing PrEP found that less than 1% of the patients needed to use copay, or to pay for copays for the medication itself. So the science clearly calls out to us that PrEP works. In addition, the lives of Americans are too important for us not to get PrEP to those people who really need it.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Josh Steinberg, ABC News. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks so much for giving this talk. I have a two-part question. Can you comment on some of the side effects or negative consequences of PrEP, and if people use PrEP inconsistently, does this lead to viral drug resistance? Should they actually become infected with the virus at a later time?
The principal side effect that needs to be monitored is kidney function, and so we recommend people return to the clinic every 3 months and have a blood test to check on how their kidneys are doing. The issue of resistance was a big question, but the data so far are reassuring. So we think that, the regimen for PrEP is not the same as the regimen for treatment of HIV, but we do have good results right now that PrEP is safe and effective for the right people, as long as you're coming back for care and get your kidney function monitored.
Thanks so much.
Next question.
Our next question comes from Matt Henney, Project Q, Atlanta.
Hi, kind of a important question, or actually two different questions, and that is one of the largest HIV care providers, AIDS Healthcare Foundation, has been pretty strident in their criticism of PrEP and the CDC for recommending it. Is there any kind of response to that criticism? And also the second part of that is that just this week the CDC came out with a new study that showed that gay men are helping fuel a rise in chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis infections. And, of course, some critics of PrEP are linking that to PrEP's increased use. Can someone address that as well? Thank you.
Let me begin, and then I think Dr. Merman will follow up. First thing to say is there was concern early on that people might increase their risk-taking following prescriptions for PrEP, but recent studies are reassuring about that. Of course, this is not the only intervention. We think it's very important to use condoms or clean needles, but we do think that PrEP has an important role to play in prevention. So we're not saying that this is the only tool, and we think that it needs to be a full toolbox for intervening against HIV, but that the more recent studies from Kaiser Permanente and the ADAPT study are reassuring about increasing risk behavior in light of taking PrEP.
And this is Jonathan Merman. First, there has been an alarming increase in the number of syphilis diagnoses in the United States over the past few years. And we are also seeing increases in the number of gonorrhea infections among gay and bisexual men. For syphilis, the over 80% of those infections are also in gay and bisexual men, and 50% of those are among gay and bisexual men with HIV infection. All of those increases started before PrEP became available or before CDC issued guidelines. There are factors that are increasing STDs among gay and bisexual men that started to occur before the onset of PrEP. However, as Dr. Shuckett had mentioned, we want to make sure that people who do access PrEP also have access to other STD prevention tools like condoms and like diagnosis and treatment of their STDs and of STDs among their partners. There's several reasons. One, it itself prevents STD infection, which can have negative health outcomes. The other is that having an STD can increase the chance that you would acquire or transmit HIV infection, and we want to make sure that that isn't happening. At the current time, we have not seen a negative consequences, as Dr. Shuckett had mentioned. So, for example, in the Kaiser Permanente study, there were no HIV infections among several hundred men who were taking PrEP. But there was a fairly high rate of STD acquisition.
And There are no further questions over the phone at this time. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number 1.
Just checking to see if there are any questions. Okay. Thank you, reporters, for joining us today. Thank you also, Dr. Shukat, Dr. Merman, and Dr. McCray. For follow-up questions, you can call the press office at 404-639-3286 or send an email to media@cdc.gov. All of the materials that were mentioned today that will help healthcare providers are available on the CDC Vital Signs website, and that's at cdc.gov/vital signs. Later today, a transcript of this telebriefing will be posted on the newsroom page at cdc.gov. Thank you all.
That concludes today's conference call. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.